Hello and welcome to the Back to Movement podcast. I'm your host, Bernadette. This show covers everything you need to know about back pain, fitness, wellness, and movement science. It is evidence-based and bringing you the latest scientific research along with expert tips so you can live pain-free. And my mission is to help you achieve a healthy back, leading you to a life full of vitality with the freedom of movement. And today I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. David Niemann to the Back to Movement podcast. Dr. Niemann is a professor in the Department of Biology at Appalachian State University and directs the Human Performance Lab at the North Carolina Research Campus, a pioneer in exercise and nutrition immunology. He is known for his groundbreaking research on how regular moderate exercise boosts immune function. Dr. Niemann has published over 400 peer-reviewed studies, received $13.8 million in research grants. He is also an accomplished marathon runner and has authored 9 books on health, exercise science, and nutrition. And he is here with us today, and I'm so excited. We are going to discuss how exercise fights inflammation, a game changer for autoimmune disease. So please help me welcome Dr. Niemann to the Back to Movement podcast.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you. Dr. Niemann, what got you interested in studying how exercise affects autoimmune disease?
So as you mentioned, I've run 58 marathons and ultra marathons. And early in my marathon racing career, I noticed, and I also taught a class in marathon running, and I noticed in my students and colleagues and people who ran marathon races that they tended to get sick afterwards. And so that got me interested in how the immune system responded to stress. And then as I went into this, I looked at all sorts of exercise modalities, different exercise workloads, and we showed that moderate activity enhanced the function of the immune system and reduced respiratory infections, whereas marathon racing and ultra marathon racing, people tended to get sick afterwards. As we delved deeper into the causes of this, we especially focused on inflammation. And we noticed that if you looked at all sorts of inflammatory biomarkers, that if you go for a brisk walk for 30, 60 minutes, there was hardly any type of inflammatory response. And if people stayed lean and fit, their systemic inflammation was very, very low. After running a marathon or ultra marathon, we noticed that inflammatory biomarkers were very, very high. And then we started also looking into people who had arthritis, who had different types of conditions. And we recently published some papers comparing 52 lean, fit, very healthy people with 52 obese, very unfit, didn't have good diets, mentally stressed, and diseased individuals, and saw that their inflammatory biomarkers were very, very high compared to very, very low levels in these lean fit individuals. And we found that the single most important lifestyle parameter that predicted low inflammation was being a lean individual, having very little body fat. That was more important than the diet. It was more important than stress or sleep and other things that we looked at. And so recently we published a review paper. This was a collaborative effort with some colleagues I have at the Shanghai University in China. And we focused in that review paper on inflammation, especially in people with various types of autoimmune disorders. And that's everything from rheumatoid arthritis to type 1 diabetes, and then many, many other types of autoimmune disorders. And our review of the literature from the past 20 years showed that let's take somebody with rheumatoid arthritis. They tend to have high inflammation. The biomarkers for inflammation are very high. But if those individuals stay lean and physically active, they can reduce the inflammation somewhat, not completely, and help moderate the symptoms that they're feeling. So in summary, after 40 years of looking at all of this, we've shown that if you're a lean, fit individual, whether you have autoimmune disorders or if you're just a regular individual, regular adult, that being lean and fit is one of the most important things you can do to control inflammation. Inflammation undergirds virtually every chronic disease that modern humans suffer from. And we're talking heart disease, various types of cancer, diabetes, osteoporosis. All of these conditions are made worse by having high inflammation.
Mm-hmm. I see. It's very interesting. You said that people with rheumatoid arthritis benefit of exercising, but I am a movement professional, and many times my clients are saying they cannot attend the class, and we are mainly doing Pilates, so not running. It's a low grade exercise, and they say, "Oh, they cannot attend because they feel, they're gonna make the inflammation worse." So that isn't true, right? So if you attend, a Pilates class, you won't make it worse, right? Or can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So as you know, there's an up and down nature to rheumatoid arthritis. Some days are better than others. Mm-hmm. During days where you have a flare-up of symptoms and inflammation, we recommend just rest and no mm-hmm. exercise. It's just better to be careful and rest. But during the days where you don't have those types of flare symptoms, exercising within your capabilities, not overdoing it, mm-hmm. Keeping it at a moderate intensity will definitely, over the long term, be one parameter that will help the individual feel better and to have a better control of their condition symptoms. But as we know, everything is multifactorial. So when it comes to rheumatoid arthritis, the most important thing there is working with the physician of the individual and making sure that the proper medications are being used according to schedule. There are some wonderful new medications for rheumatoid arthritis and many other autoimmune disorders. And then keeping those on schedule, and then supporting the medication schedule with physical activity and staying a lean individual will definitely help the individual feel better mentally and to help better control the inflammation.
I'm glad you said multifactorial because, I'm a back pain expert and chronic back pain is multifactorial too. People think that there is one cause. Well, if it's non-specific back pain, we are talking about multifactorial, stress, anxiety, depression, low physical activity, many factors can contribute to any chronic pain, right?
Correct. Yes. Yes, for sure. Yeah, I've worked on a lot of court cases with people who have back pain who are suing their employers, claiming that it was a work-related condition. We do know that people who carry extra body fat, tend to have more back pain. But that's just one cause. Then there are all the other causes that you mentioned, including improper lifting at work and other things. Also, having low core body strength. So your abdomen and back, if these are not fit and strong, then people tend to have more back pain as well. And then because many people with low back pain or other types of back pain, they tend to be heavier individuals with more body fat. That makes the inflammation worse. And so again, in our review paper, we talk about that all inflammatory conditions are benefited by staying lean and fit.
Yes, it's actually not that easy, especially when you're dealing with chronic back pain and you are a little bit overweight, to stay active, you know, and I do believe that is a challenge.
Yes.
for many, many people.
Yeah, we call it a vicious cycle where the individual is disinclined to exercise because their back hurts, and then they tend to gain some weight when they're not being active. They may eat more because they're depressed, and then they get heavier, and then it gets harder and harder to exercise as time goes on and everything gets worse. So that's why, a person just has to step forward, make a goal here to get the weight under control over the long term. We don't recommend quick weight loss. It's just a whole complete lifestyle change where the eating is brought under better control along with regular activity. And it doesn't take running or that sort of thing. Brisk walking is a sufficient mode of activity to help reduce weight over time if you control your diet as well, and to control inflammation. You do not have to be a runner or a cyclist to attain these benefits. And that's the good news. It just takes 30, 60 minutes of moderate to somewhat vigorous activity to achieve all of these wonderful benefits.
And you don't have to be skin and bones. We are not talking about you have to be skinny.
No.
You know, just not heavy, right? Am I correct?
Yeah.
Because everyone is unique and different. And we also have to accept how our body is built. Even though I was always skinny, I had back pain from my early 20s because I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Yeah.
And of course, that condition affected my spine, my back. And also, I didn't feel good. I was depressed. I had anxiety living away from home. I was living in Australia. And even though I'm Hungarian, you know, the cultural shock, it was many, many things that contributed to my probably autoimmune disease plus my chronic back pain.
Correct. Yeah. And I'm sorry you went through all that. And are you under good control now?
Absolutely. I feel never felt better. I'm 38 now and I feel better than when I was in my 20s.
And what do you think was the most important factor in getting under control?
Most important factor is work within my pain limits when I exercise. So I push myself a little, but not too much. So I'm in pain for 3 days, although I did make those mistakes. I started running and I didn't listen to my body. Oh, I'm fine. And I ran 3 kilometers and the next day my ankle was killing me. I could barely come down the stairs. My back was, you know, like really bad. And I couldn't work out for 5 days. So I did make those mistakes. But I kind of like watched my body, pushed within my limits, within my pain tolerance. And food is really important for me because I feel like if I eat certain food over the weekend, I usually eat things that I shouldn't. And I have to be honest with you, on Monday, I feel it.
Yep.
You know, you have a glass of wine. And it is okay. I do believe that everything in moderation, even moderation in moderation. So I have some pizza with my son. I have a 9-year-old son. We go out, we have some fun. But if I would eat that every single day, I would definitely suffer.
Yeah. And see, back to what you were doing with the exercise, I tell people one of the most important things to control is one's zeal. People tend to get very zealous to get fit quickly, and they overdo it, feel terrible, and then they say, forget it. It really just takes brisk walking. That's a sufficient stimulus. The most important factor in lowering inflammation with that brisk walking then is reducing dietary fat intake and other inflammatory parts of the diet, such that the caloric intake is brought down and the body fat is brought down, and all of the symptoms will be reduced when that happens, but not completely taken away. And what I tell people who are going through this type of thing, who have to be unusually careful with their diet, unusually careful with their exercise so that they don't overdo anything, I tell people, really, because you have to be so careful, you're going to be a very, very healthy individual as time goes on because you are being so careful. A lot of people who never suffer terrible symptoms, if they have some people 4 or 5 alcoholic drinks and overeat hot dogs and cheeseburgers, et cetera. So a lot of people, they don't suffer much from doing that. And then they suffer the consequences later on with a heart attack or various types of cancer or type 2 diabetes as they gain weight. So I have an aunt who has rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. We've talked deeply about her condition and what she can do and everything that you've just said and everything that I've written about, I discussed with her. And she has various parts of her diet that she simply cannot let go, that she knows brings her symptoms. But what you said, I think, is important. It isn't black or white with these types of foods. It's just having some here and there and not too much.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that because, you know, moderation, I think with everything, even exercising in moderation, you know, we have those foods and everything for a reason. Let's enjoy them, but maybe not every day because, of course, they are not healthy. But every once in a while, I do believe it is okay. We have to live a little, right?
That's right. Yeah. No, if you get too strict with the diet or with the exercise, it's almost like joining a cult, and life isn't as much fun when that happens. And then in the long term, you're not going to be a very happy person. So yeah, it just the moderation part, and everybody has to listen to their bodies and find out what works best for them.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Dr. Niemann, can you tell us what is an autoimmune disease or disorders? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so basically, the immune system knows self from non-self. So in all of the organs and tissues and cells, the immune system knows it's a part of this particular human being. Unfortunately, in some individuals, usually due to some genetic problem, the immune system thinks that, for example, something like beta cells in the pancreas, these beta cells secrete insulin. Well, for some strange reason, in people who get type 1 diabetes, the immune system starts attacking those beta cells as if they're non-self. Mm-hmm. And we don't know all of the reasons this happens, but then the immune system destroys the beta cells in the pancreas. All of a sudden, the individual cannot secrete insulin and then is reliant on insulin injections the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. So these autoimmune disorders are all of a similar story to that, where the immune system, for example, in people who have knee osteoarthritis, various types of arthritis, you'll have the immune system start attacking the cartilage inside the joint. And this is made worse by obesity. It's made worse by traumatic injuries in the joint. And then the immune system, there's an inflammation response that occurs, and the cartilage starts to erode at a high rate. And then the individual will have arthritis in the joint and severe pain. So, you know, that's what happens, is the immune system just simply gets a little off base and attacks tissues and cells that normally it would not do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. And how common are autoimmune diseases? Is it very common?
In our review paper, rates vary around the world, but we have put in there different statistics for different autoimmune disorders. So when it comes to arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis, you know, that's one of the more common ones, and we're talking 1-3% of the population. Most of the other autoimmune disorders are at a lower rate than that. But depending on the nation and the age group, the gender, et cetera, you can see rates up to 1 in 10 individuals having some type of autoimmune disorder.
Wow. Can you explain how exercise affects inflammation in people with autoimmune diseases? I know we touched based on a little bit about that, you know, but can you tell us, is there a specific exercise that we shouldn't do? Yes.
Yep. So that's an excellent question. And we cover that in the paper. So let's say you go on a brisk walk and you do not have an autoimmune disorder. And let's look at one inflammation biomarker that we call interleukin 6. This is a very common inflammatory biomarker. Typically, IL-6 is below 1 in kind of normal weight individuals. Another inflammatory marker is C-reactive protein. Mm-hmm. And that also is normally below 1. In lean, fit individuals. So let's look at C-reactive protein interleukin 6. So you go on a walk, and we've done this in the lab many times. After a brisk walk, interleukin 6 and C-reactive protein will stay basically the same. They hardly go up at all, maybe just a little bit. And so if you have somebody with an autoimmune disorder, IL-6 and CRP would start off elevated just because of the disease condition. But if then they go on a walk, it will not go up either because there is nothing to stimulate that going high. Mm-hmm. What really becomes bothersome, like if you take a person, a normal person without an autoimmune disorder, they can run a marathon and IL-6 typically, we've measured it'll go up to 40 or 50. C-reactive protein will also go up to about 10 or so, but we've seen it as high as 100 in some people if they run an ultra marathon. The problem there is if you're a person with autoimmune disorder and you start high with those and then dare to run a marathon, there will be an excessive inflammatory response. IL-6 and CRP will go sky high. And we just simply don't recommend that people with autoimmune disorders go into this severe level of exercise. It's just not helping anything. And I understand the challenge. You know, everybody that I used to run marathons with, I mean, they do it because of the challenge. It's a great challenge, but it's not a healthy challenge. To run 26.2 miles as fast as you can is really not a healthy thing to do. It's more you want to see if you can do that sort of thing. So people with autoimmune disorders really should find some other type of challenge other than that severe activity.
Okay. It's really interesting you mentioned that running, it's fight or flight, right? So you're running away, literally. Well, and that's not healthy for us if you have an autoimmune disorder, right?
Yes. Like if you go on a jog, and you're with friends and you're talking and that sort of thing, and you're going pretty slow, there'll be some inflammation, but not much. It's the problem in a race is you're pushing yourself to the limits because you want to run as fast as you can and win a medal for your age group. And that is the problem. It's this unrelenting high intensity that goes on for 26.2 miles for most people, you know, that's 3 hours or more. And that is just simply way too much stress. And then you call fight or flight. The whole body goes into a physiological state of stress, fight or flight. And stress hormones are very, very high. There's huge sympathetic nervous activity. The immune system reflects that stress. And there's a downturn in immunity, an upsurge in inflammation. And that can remain for hours. And we have measured that it can continue for two or three days afterwards. So it's just not a healthy thing to do, even for somebody with no autoimmune disorder. But for people with autoimmune disorders, it's just compounding the problem. It's just not wise to do that.
So you don't recommend running for people with autoimmune disorder. So maybe I shouldn't run, right?
Running, there's many definitions. So jogging is like slow running. A lot of people enjoy that. And that is very healthy. There's hardly any negative parts to that. But like when people run marathons, they're breathing heavily the whole time. And they're right on the edge of what we call the lactate threshold, where you're just below where the lactate accumulates. And that is usually in most people about 70% of their maximal capacity. And that is very stressful. And we have shown that after about an hour of doing that, the stress hormones just start to skyrocket as the muscle glycogen goes way down. And your muscles become starved for glycogen or carbohydrate, and then everything goes bananas, including the immune system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Is there a relationship between autoimmune conditions and chronic pain? I think the listeners are really interested about that.
Yes, well, in arthritis, when the autoimmune disorder, rheumatoid arthritis, attacks the cartilage, and then the joint is almost bone on bone, there's a tremendous amount of pain and stiffness there. That's directly because of the autoimmune disorder. And then, let's just take somebody with type 1 diabetes. As you know, people with type 1 diabetes have accelerated problems with vision. They have the nerves suffer damage, and then their feet can lose sensation, and then the feet can get cut, and then people have to have their feet amputated. Mm-hmm. And so it's all linked together that when you have some type of autoimmune disorder, the various tissues from the eyes to the kidneys to the nerves to the joints are all not going to respond appropriately to life or physical activity, and the net result is pain and discomfort, and unfortunately, a shortened life expectancy.
Mm-hmm. What role physical activity can play in managing symptoms?
Well, the chief benefit in all of the studies that have been done in this area, the chief benefit is that people feel better mentally. People who exercise, they just feel less depressed, have less anxiety. they feel their mood is elevated. We've measured this in many studies. This is regarded as the chief benefit. When you ask the average person, why do you exercise? They'll say, it's to feel better. And everybody feels better with activity. Now, people with rheumatoid arthritis have to be careful. They can't do it during a flare-up. Let's even take chronic fatigue syndrome, which, you know, people are still trying to figure out what the primary cause of chronic fatigue syndrome is. But people with chronic fatigue syndrome, if they exercise too hard, then they have exercise intolerance that can last for days afterwards. And so, you know, everybody has to be careful, regarding the context of the disorder and the amount of activity, et cetera, et cetera. But in general, if you do something like brisk walking, 30 to 60 minutes, this is the public health recommendation that every human should strive for 30, 60 minutes of moderate activity on most days of the week. When all people follow that, they feel better mentally. And then on top of that, we know the immune system receives benefit. We know that inflammation goes down, especially if the person's losing weight and maintaining low weight at the same time. And then we know, for example, people with diabetes are more prone to heart disease, but if people with diabetes exercise, long-term studies show they have less heart disease over time. And on the list goes, is there are many chronic and acute benefits for all people to exercise on a regular basis. I'm sure you've heard the term exercise is medicine, and exercise truly is like medicine. There is no pill that anybody can take that can achieve these acute and chronic benefits better than physical activity. But again, everything in moderation at the right time, depending on the person's condition.
Very good. Motion is lotion, right?
Yes.
Yep. So there is that 20-year systematic review we were talking about, and the anti-inflammatory effects of exercise on autoimmune diseases. So that was the review, right? And your review says that most people with autoimmune diseases can do moderate exercise safely, and that is brisk walking or even Pilates, yoga, Tai Chi, right?
Yeah.
Because these are all low-grade exercises.
Yeah, and resistance exercise with weights, where you do more endurance lifting, not the real heavy, intense weightlifting. Mm-hmm.
What if we do graded exercise and we are not jumping in heavy straight away, but we are, you know, doing graded exercise over time, you know, slowly increasing the intensity and also the volume? That's what I usually do with my clients with chronic back pain as well. And some of them, they have autoimmune disease. And what we do, we start with where they are. You know, we start with wall push-ups. We are not pushing them, you know, wall push-ups. If you can do 20, then we can maybe try kneeling push-ups. And then if you are okay with that, we do that for a while. And then we go on. But it usually probably takes months. Someone in my program started in October, and now she can do a full body weight push-ups. But we are in September now, you know, 11 months.
Well, progressive exercise where you slowly but surely increase the workload over time is recommended for all age groups, for all types of individuals. So what you're describing is exactly what should happen. Everybody's different, and everybody needs to move forward at an improvement level that fits their symptoms and condition. Now, we do know that intermittent exercise has a lot of benefits for people with pain. And we have shown, we've done studies where we have people kind of push for 1 or 2 minutes, and then they go real easy for 1 or 2 minutes, and then they'll kind of push a bit for 1 or 2 minutes. And we've shown that the immune system inflammatory response is very, very low with intermittent exercise, because during the easy cycles, everything kind of goes back to normal, and then a little bit up, and then everything goes down. There's no accumulation over time. And so that's another excellent system of exercise for people who have some symptoms and inflammation, is to, during the workout, is to have the up and down nature, the intermittent activity.
Yes, that's what I usually do. So we do something that they can only do 10 of or 15 of. And then we do something that they can do. It's easier, you know, they can do more. And then we go back again to do a little bit of a strength. And then we do this. We switch back and forth.
Yep. Excellent. I also want to say one other thing. So we are real big on exercise being fun. And then also that exercise, for some people, achieves some kind of purpose, and then the compliance is better over time. For example, some people, if they have to travel to a gym and then do exercise with a leader, they'll be gung-ho for maybe a month or two, and then they stop because they don't like it, it's too time-consuming, etc. We have shown that some individuals just love to play, and they'll keep doing it for years. Like if they come at noontime and play basketball with some buddies during the lunch break. I've seen people who've been doing that for 20, 30 years because it's just fun and they look forward to it. The compliance is excellent. Other people like exercise that has a purpose, like riding their bike to work. It's transportation exercise. It's getting them somewhere. They're achieving a goal while they exercise. Or some people have some property and they put in trails and they dig out rocks and make a rock wall or whatever. And that's manual labor exercise where they're actually achieving a purpose. And so I want to urge people, a lot of people think, well, I have to go to a gym and that's the only way to exercise. That's not true.
Mm-hmm. And, I agree.
Yeah. And also the number one form of activity by the greatest percentage of adults in America is brisk walking with friends. So you just get a walking group, you meet at a certain time, and then people just talk the whole time and enjoy that. We've done studies. We've had people do this for 12 to 33 weeks. They love getting together. They love talking. And so that's social exercise. And then there's fun exercise, and then there's work exercise and transportation exercise, and then there's gym exercise. So everybody can kind of choose the setting that they know they can keep doing for years. They shouldn't think for months. They should think, I can do this for years.
That's correct. And this is why I exactly created this program, online program, for women for back pain, because usually they don't like to go to the gym. They feel too intimidated. They cannot lift heavy. You know, they just don't feel good. So it is 100% online and it only takes 30 minutes and they can commit to it because they don't have to travel.
Yeah.
You know, and they can just log in online. And what you mentioned, which is really important, this is why my first class, in fact, the first week is free, because if they don't feel good with me, if the vibe is not good, if they don't like it, then they don't have to commit to it, because that's really important. It is key to love what you're doing.
Yeah.
It is the most important thing and something that you can commit to.
Yeah.
And you can do it consistently, because even me, you know, I can't do magic within a couple of weeks to completely overcome back pain. It takes weeks, especially if you have anything chronic for 10 years, 15 years, it takes time and consistency.
Yep. The other good news about the latest research is you can gather your 30, 60 minutes in a day and spread it out and do it here and there as long as it accumulates. So a lot of people have to get their kids to school early and go to work. But then maybe every other hour they can go out and take a 5 or 10 minute walk. They can go up and down the stairs for a couple minutes. They can, during the lunch hour, meet with some friends and go on a walk. And then the minutes accumulate over the day, and studies are now showing you, the minutes don't have to be all at the same time. They can be accumulated like coins in your pocket, a nickel here, a dime there, a quarter there, and all of a sudden you got a dollar worth of money. And it's the same with exercise minutes. You can do it the same way. And for a lot of people, that is good news because they don't have to put on bright colored shoes or their shorts or whatever. They can just have their work clothes on and do this walking or stair climbing and accumulate the minutes that way. And the health benefits are just as good as if you did it for 30, 60 minutes all at one time in a gym.
Yeah, that's great news for everyone, I think.
Yes.
Can you give 3 tips to the listeners how to start exercising and to stay consistent with like an autoimmune disease?
Well, we highly recommend, especially people with severe symptoms, that, you know, they meet with a doctor and a physical therapist and get everything under control, the medication, the medical support, and then discuss a plan that makes sense. And it could be all of what we've been discussing. There are people with type 1 diabetes that like running and run half marathons, 10Ks, 5Ks, etc. That's possible. That's what that person wants to do with their medical team and good control of their blood glucose and insulin. They can do that if that's what they want. And then other people with their medical care group can then decide that they would rather do manual labor or play some sports. And so all of this is possible. Any of the exercise modalities that we've been discussing are possible for any individual with autoimmune disorders, but it should really be within the context of the medical care team, because every professional agency that has put forth exercise recommendations for people with diabetes or people with arthritis and all of these other inflammatory disorders, all of these organizations are recommending that this be done within the context of the medical care team, because the medications are such an important part of this. And for example, for a person with type 1 diabetes, the insulin requirement varies greatly depending on the amount of activity that's being done. Mm-hmm. Exercise actually has an insulin-like effect in normal people, people with beta cells that secrete insulin. So the exercise actually has an insulin-like effect. And if a person is type 2 diabetic and using insulin, they would need less insulin on active days. So all of this can be figured out with the medical care team.
Okay, so number one is doctor. Ask for, you know, if get clearance from the doctor, right? So that's number one tip.
Yeah. And the medication scheme. You know,
and the medication. Yes. Yeah. And the second would be find something that they enjoy doing, right?
Yeah. Correct. Okay. And I think for a lot of people that I know who have various conditions, something is probably the most common thing that'll work is brisk walking with friends. That would be something that would be a good starter.
Good start. Yes.
Yeah.
I actually, in my back pain programs, I recommend 20 minute walking every day, because walking, it's not just for the physical health. And as you said, it is for our mental health. And I personally like to walk outside and not on the treadmill, but if it's raining, of course, the treadmill will work too, better than nothing. But personally, I do walk between 10 and 30 minutes every day. And I try to work out, you know, as much as I can within the pain tolerance. But yeah, so that's great. Walking. And what would be the third tip?
Well, along with what we just said, Ken Cooper, who is a famous author, wrote the book Aerobics. He said, walk your dog every day, whether you have one or not.
And that's a good one.
But a lot of people, if they have a dog, it makes them go on walks several times a day because the dog needs to get out a couple, three times a day. So that if somebody is needing some motivation, then that's another thing to consider as a pet, a support pet. And then that's going to force you to go out and walk. And then in one of the neighborhoods that I live in during the winter, many of the dog walkers, they're out early in the day and walking with each other, with people who have dogs. And they all have a wonderful social time with their dogs and friends. So all of this is depending on the individual, but that's another idea to think about, is having a pet, because it almost forces you to get out on a regular basis.
And it forces you to stay consistent, right?
Yeah.
So if you can't afford a dog, or if you cannot have a dog, what would be our option? Maybe set your phone, set an alarm, or...
My wife is a night person. I'm a morning person. If she had to set an alarm to get up, she would die. I mean, it's just never going to work. So everybody has to find the time of day that works best. The good news is there's been research showing that if you're a morning person and exercise early in the day, or for a later person, you exercise later in the day, the benefits are the same, whether it's early or late. So everybody needs to find the time of day that suits them. And again, the social support in a walking group or a sports group, you can't hardly beat that for being the most common option that's going to help people exercise with joy on a regular basis for years.
Yeah, that's definitely really important. And what should doctors and fitness trainers keep in mind when recommending exercise for people with autoimmune disorders?
Well, it's everything we've been talking about, is the medication scheme is number one, the mm-hmm. symptoms, the side effects, the adverse events, the symptoms of the individual, all of that has to be carefully considered. And then once all of that is put together, you talk about compliance with the individual and see what they're willing to do, want to do, and make sure it isn't something that people think they should do. It's more something that people want to do, that they actually want to have a garden and get out there and dig and put in trails and landscape and do this and that. Or people just love to hike with friends, hiking on trails. I have a friend they have a hiking group and they hike on a different trail on a regular basis, discovering new trails. So on and on it goes. There's many, many ways to find an activity that works for the individual. The medical care team, sometimes they're not real good at this part of the prescription. They're not good on exercise prescription and adapting everything. And that's where maybe meeting more with people like you who are into exercise leadership would help. Sometimes the medical care team doesn't have enough knowledge on this. My daughter, she loves going to the gym. She is not going to do anything else other than go to a gym. That's like her big deal. And there's many people who feel that way. And if the gym, like many YMCAs, have special classes for people with various conditions, that's the good thing about YMCAs, is they adapt. and they have special classes for special groups. So that's another option, is to go to a YMCA and see what they can do to help.
That's great. And how do you think exercise will be used to manage autoimmune disorders in the future? Do you think it is important to exercise?
It's like the medication scheme, it's just below it. I mean, the medication's most important, but exercise and staying lean at the same time, having a good diet, it's right there with it. It all goes together. And then, you know, if a person with type 1 diabetes is lean and fit and keeping their glucose under control, and they keep doing that and avoiding huge glucose surges, over time, their symptoms and the adverse events associated with type 1 diabetes are way down compared to people who are out of control with their type 1 diabetes. So it's extra work, extra time and effort. Some feel it isn't fair. But in the long run, I do believe it makes the person a healthier individual because they're really, really being careful. You know, it's the same thing with obesity. So we know that obesity, that there are genes that make some people more prone to obesity. And I tell my students, I say, you know, the obesity prone individual, most studies show that they have to try harder than other individuals who are not obesity prone to keep their weight under control. But I said, because they have to be so careful with their diet and exercise and try harder, in the end, they're going to be a better person for it and a very healthy individual. And so extra effort, but there are some benefits in that extra effort.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Niemann. All right. So the three tips is ask definitely doctor's recommendation, right? So you get clearance. Yes. Second is start exercising something that you enjoy doing. And third is stay consistent with it.
Yes. And I would also add, you know, these new studies that we've just published, and they're open source, that people can look under my name for them. And basically, we have shown of all the lifestyle factors, the most important thing is keeping your body fat down at normal levels. I cannot emphasize that enough. There are some people who are active, but they have too much body fat and they still will have symptoms. Exercise has to go hand in hand with the diet to keep the body fat down. We have shown that when the body fat is down at normal levels, then the disease is better controlled and the symptoms are reduced. So
thank you so much, Dr. Niemann. And thanks for everyone listening to the Back to Movement podcast with your host, Bernadette, and our very special guest, Dr. David Niemann. I hope you enjoyed this episode and all the insights you learned about how exercise affects autoimmune disorders. And that's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.